2004. This is Ruth Henderson interviewing Rosemary Bonsack for the Harford County Public Library. Okay, this is Ruth interviewing Dr. Rosemary O'Connor.
Very Rosemary, thanks, Rosemary. And my father's father opened a store in Hattiesburg on that corner, and the house was open back of that store. So my father operated that store for many, many years until his passing in 1968. And he had little sidelines. He liked to own some horses, which he did at the time, and Hattiesburg was very prominent. And I used to go out and walk horses and train horses up to the time I was in a senior.
Well,
that was fun.
Did he ever have winners?
Absolutely. Yes. The college people actually called them back then to come into the store. And they used to love to come to our store because we sold tin candy. And I remember all the kids coming from the St. James College Church on Green Street on the corner. Every Sunday morning, we would have an influx of young kids buying their tin candy, and it was fun to watch them.
Did you work in the store?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I worked in the store, helped. And then my dad would go to the post office and make those little rounds. And every time he came back, he said I would be eating a bag of potato chips from business. He said, "There will be my chocolate again."
Well, fun.
And also, my grandmother lived with us, and she was from Lebanon originally. And she had a friend who sort of was homeless, I guess, but we took her in many years ago. So I used to call her Aunt Annie, her name was Annie. And I can remember as a kid, my big trip of the day was to go up to the Hattiesburg Railroad station, which we had on the right on Warren Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be about a block and a half walk from my house. And we would make a little lunch, and we'd go up and take it and sit in the station reception room there. And I would eat my lunch and walk. I was good to get on to Ashton College. And from there I went on to University of Maryland Med School.
Okay. Did you always know you wanted to be a physician?
I probably realized that when I was in high school.
Is that
I had
right?
A chemistry teacher who was very helpful at the time.
Try again.
Okay.
To see what happens with it. So you always knew you wanted to be a physician?
Yeah, I think that I always did. I was always interested in the sciences and in people and biology and anatomy. So I think that it was always something that I really would like to do.
Did you find it difficult being a woman in med school at that time?
It's interesting, but there were only two girls in the class. As a matter of fact, Dr. Beverly Stump and I were the only girls in the class. And, but I never felt any real animosity toward me, except for a couple of guys.
Mm-hmm.
One guy used to come in every morning and say you shouldn't be here, what are you doing here? And, but on the whole, they were very receptive and very kind, and we all worked together at Mount Hall, actually. We had a wonderful class those nice students.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's surprising.
I never felt a real problem at that point in time. Maybe it was just me, because I'm kind of a positive person, and I was just try to look at things in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
So it might have been just my reaction.
Did you have resentment from hospital staff members?
No, never had that kind of resentment. I never felt it there. I felt it, actually, I transferred, my husband and I got married. We met at Washington College, and we got married after my second year of medical school. And I think that when I transferred to Women's Med, in Philadelphia, I felt more of a problem with other women. I think they were very jealous very competitive, more than men at that point in time.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I felt a competitiveness, especially since I think I got a 98 on my first day of the exam, and when they found out I was halfway smart, maybe we shouldn't tell her anything.
Well,
but it was an interesting time.
Did you ever have women patients or men patients that kind of felt the same thing as a woman?
Never.
That's
I never felt
interesting.
That kind of resentment, and I did a lot of urology when I was in medical school and as an intern.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of work with men,
mm-hmm.
and never felt.
Well, that's encouraging to know.
Yes.
It really is.
It was not a problem for them.
So. Well, that's good. But of course, it might have been you too.
Well, as I say, I think sometimes it depends on the personality and, mm-hmm. and how you look at things from the mm-hmm. beginning. And I never looked at things in a negative sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
Very seldom did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that maybe that's what it was.
Okay. Now, where did you set up your first practice?
Well, as a matter of fact, I finished at my internship at Eastern Hospital in Eastern Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Jim and I were married, and I had 3 children in 3 years. So I had one child my junior year, one child my senior year, and I graduated 8 months pregnant with my first child. So I...
The word high achiever keeps coming to my mind.
Yeah, anyway, at that time, I decided I was not able to do a residency with 3 kids in diapers. So I got an internship in Eastern Pennsylvania where we were living because
mm-hmm.
my husband had a job and ran away. So I did that, and then from there I decided, well, maybe I should look for a 40-hour-a-week job, which was very difficult at
mm-hmm.
that time for a physician. And fortunately, I found one here at Abbott Recruiting Ground,
mm-hmm.
and I became probably the first, I'm sure, the first woman civilian physician that they had hired. Out of the performing hospital.
Was the hospital fairly new then?
It was. I started in the old hospital, in the
mm-hmm.
old barracks type hospital. And then the first year I was there, we moved into the new hospital in June of 62, I believe. And we moved over to the new hospital, and we thought we were great. We had all the room in the world. You know, after being in the barracks, it was just a wonderful thing. And from there, I became chief of the outpatient clinic and then chief of the department of clinics. And I stayed there until I think it was 72, 73, and that's
eight. So you liked working there?
Yes. It was wonderful. I always met a new group of young men
mm-hmm.
that came in that were army doctors, and they were a delight really to work with.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good group. I mean, the civilian personnel were wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm. And now how many children do we have?
Now we have 5 children. I had a son, David, while I worked at ACC, and then also a son, Jed, after I was working there as well. And so I had a couple more. So now we're up to 2 girls and 3 boys.
And a full-time job.
And a full-time job.
And mothers today wonder how you did it.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love to cook, so I came home and cooked dinner every night.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's it.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get involved in politics? Where did we go from being a doctor with all this time on our hands?
Well, I was always interested in politics, too. I don't know if you know, but I had an older brother, Tom Hayden,
mm-hmm.
who was interested in politics and was very political from the time he got out of law school. He and Joe Tidings and Dale Hess and Charlie Moore were the 4 youngest delegation to ever go to
that right?
They were all in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
They called them the 4 horsemen of the delegation of the House at
mm-hmm.
that time. And so I was always interested in politics from the time he became involved, which was 1954.
Mm-hmm.
So I would help him with campaigns and politics and all the whole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But anyway, I got really involved back in those days. But I really became involved myself on my own back in the 80s when I was elected to the Board of Medicine for the state of Maryland and then was the representative to the Commission on Medical Discipline and became their executive secretary. And during that period of time, I found that there were all kinds of regulations coming down from the state of Maryland, which I did not feel were to the benefit
mm-hmm.
of the patients
mm-hmm.
in the state. So I felt, you know, these things were sort of going awry and we don't have anybody
mm-hmm.
in the House of Delegates that really understands the healthcare delivery system. And I thought, well, maybe it would be beneficial to have somebody directly involved in the hospital that you might be able to help with it.
So and did you feel successful in doing that?
I think I did in many areas. Of course, I, as others, find it very frustrating to want to do something,
mm-hmm.
know, right away, and the political process and the democratic process always doesn't lend itself
mm-hmm.
to having things done as rapidly as you want, and
mm-hmm.
I think that that's where my frustration laid most of the time when I tried to get anything done. I did start some good things, scholarships for young people going into family medicine, and a 30-year rotating associate at the University of Maryland, which is still going on
mm-hmm.
today. And I think that in other areas as well, we started some things that I've been putting down as far as the contamination process to try to decrease any contamination that might be coming from the waste products that we've had out there. And things like the snack packs, which I get each year, and a lot of different things.
Which did you like better, being in politics or being in medicine?
I always enjoyed both, and I did.
Did you really?
I truly did. I can't say that I liked one more than the other, but I think you better start on my nose.
Okay.
But I think my whole life I've had a positive outlook about things, so I enjoy everything I've done. And I think that my life has been diverse enough that I've liked the diversity of it. I've enjoyed every thing that I've done.
You wouldn't change anything?
No.
Well,
I don't think I'd change anything. I think that I enjoyed my years practicing medicine. I love helping patients and being with patients. And I think that when I was in the legislature, it was a wonderful time as well. I met lots of great people. And then I was involved, too, politically with the American Academy of Family Physicians at the same time.
Do you think this sense of service came from your family?
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah. My mother and father gave themselves constantly. We had a store that, and we had everything in the store, clothing and food, and I remember many days people knocking on the store when it was closed, and Daddy and Mom would use them because they needed help. They needed clothing, they needed food, they needed whatever. And I think that it was something.
Well, that's good. Well, you've been involved in a lot of volunteer activities.
Yes, Well, I was involved with the kids at school at St. Genevieve's. I was homeschool president at one time. Then I moved on to John Carroll and became homeschool president. And I was chairman of the board there for 6 years. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. And then I went on to the Cancer Society, President of the Cancer Society, President of the Heart Association, President of Mann House, the Alcoholics Rehab, place up in Bel Air. And then I became very involved with the American Academy of Family Physicians as a volunteer, and went on to be on the board of directors.
Exactly what do they do?
They're about 100,000 strong right now, and they are into everything, public health, scope of practice, trying to determine the needs of the public and where better the family physician can serve the public and the patient, and all kinds of CME credits that we sponsor through the local state chapters as well as the national federation, so that it's a very active group of wonderful people, and they have a board of directors. And I was on that for 6 years on the big board as well as the foundation board. So that was
Do you feel that the state of medicine today is better or worse than when you started in medicine? I know, that's a big question.
That's a tough question.
Yeah, it is.
I think that we'll probably train doctors as well. I'm not so sure that they have the kind of patient-doctor relationship that we were given when I was in medical school, because we did a lot of hands-on patient-doctor practice that I don't see today in offices. We did our own history, we did our own physical. That's not done today in most medical practices. And I think in that way, I enjoyed it more back when I practiced medicine. I think that these physicians have a lot more to offer in the way of help, as far as x-ray, technology, all kinds of programs that they can do for their patients, and all kinds of tests that can be done to determine, diagnoses and that sort of thing. I do feel that the healthcare delivery system is there and quite a bit.
So much of it seems to be involved with the whole insurance issue, too.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Because when I was in the House of Delegates, I did put a bill in, which went nowhere, that said that the insurance company could not be involved with the practice of medicine. And I was hoping that would go, because I feel very strongly that the insurance companies should not be
Mm-hmm.
Not me running the practice of medicine.
Right.
I think the healthcare delivery system should be run by physicians and healthcare professionals,
mm-hmm.
and allied healthcare professionals, and not by insurance companies whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that evolution has really, really affected the
mm-hmm.
And I think that we've gotten into more administrative stuff and less caring for the patient.
Yeah, unfortunate.
And it's a very, very unfortunate thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel distressed about that every day.
Yeah. And as a layperson, doesn't mm-hmm. seem that there's much we can do about it except who we're electing. And
that's right. And unfortunately, even we who were elected officials in state legislatures,
mm-hmm.
now when I was in, we had about 8 across the country positions in state offices.
Is that right?
and national office.
Uh-huh.
Today, I think they're up to 24 or 25.
It's still not a
great many. And I don't think, and I hate to say this, but I still think very strongly that most elected officials do not have a clue about the healthcare delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
And they will admit it. Most of them will
mm-hmm.
admit we don't know very much about it. We've
mm-hmm.
got to help us. We've got to, you know, teach us. We've got to, you know, bring us along.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a problem.
Yeah.
It's a very good problem to try to get anything done. It's a very laborious kind of existence to try to
get it. Well, now I have to go back and ask you how you did all this with all these children and managed to get things done. How do you figure you did this?
Well, first of all, I had wonderful parents that contributed a great deal. You know, my father believed that you can do anything you put your mind to.
That's a wonderful attitude.
Day, but that's exactly the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer. What do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't give you, much of a
mm-hmm.
choice. But he said, you're smart. You should do something that's productive and worthwhile, and you should go on to do it. So, I mean, we had that kind of, you know, really instilled it
mm-hmm.
in us, that kind of a mentality instilled in us when we were young.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that from there, they always helped us along the way. Of course, when I was having these children, I called upon my mother and my father numerous times, you know, to help me out
mm-hmm.
physically and on site, you know,
right.
and say, hey, Mom, I need help with children in between babysitters and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. And I think that I probably do have, thank God, an innate amount of energy I have the energy to draw upon, so I've been very fortunate
mm-hmm.
to be able to do
mm-hmm.
things that I've
You must have had a supportive husband also.
Oh, yeah. and Jim was wonderful. I mean, we got married during my sophomore year in med school, and so started having children right away,
mm-hmm.
because I was just, I'm a good Catholic little girl who didn't practice respiratory very well.
Which probably wouldn't have changed it anyway.
Well, it wouldn't have changed anything anyway. But Jim helped, and when I did my internship, of course, when I was on duty every other night and every other weekend, he was on duty every other
mm-hmm.
night and every other weekend, too,
mm-hmm.
which took a lot of stamina and a lot of state support.
Oh, sure.
And he's always been good. And he's always allowed me really to do whatever I wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a very
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now tell me a little bit about the children.
Well, we have 5 children, Jeanette, Karen, and Tommy, all practice in the county. Jeanette is an optometrist who practices with Paris Scriptura. She was one of the first people that ever went in with them. It was kind of unusual at that time because they didn't have optometrists going in with ophthalmologists, but it was
mm-hmm.
a very wonderful relationship, and she's been with them at least 20 years now, I think. And still practices with them and has an office in Harry Gates as well as Bel Air. And Karen has her own office in Aberdeen doing physical therapy. And she's always been interested in sports and rehabilitation to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But she has her own practice and really enjoys that. Jeanette has 3 children. She and her husband Dave, my oldest daughter, and she has Olivia, who is 11, and a set of twins, 8. So they're enjoying it. And Karen has not married, has no children. And then we have Tommy, my oldest son, who is a dentist in the Edmonton area and practices there in 024, and has been there for 15, 20 years almost. And he is married to a nurse, and he's helped out at a couple of times. And they have two adopted children. They adopted from Russia. And the bottom one, they were both boys. They were 4 months and 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they went over and got them. And then they had their own son a couple of years later. So, you know, it's interesting. Now they have three sons.
Mm-hmm.
So they're interested and they're quite a lot of fun too. So. And then we have David, who is my only son that's away from home. He has a master's in clinical psych. And he's practicing up in the Minnesota area where he's got his master's.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still up in Minneapolis and he's always up there. He is not married. He's been preparing on the way to the
mountain.
And then Jay, our youngest, which was a surprise, but a wonderful surprise, he went to Washington College and got a degree in environmental work for the Department of Natural Resources for a while, and decided he would learn the massage therapy, so that's what he was doing at the time. And
so the whole tradition of caring and giving back contributes to the whole family.
I think so. And he has two little children, Caleb and Paula, 3 and 1, and his wife is a nurse as well. So we're all in that.
The tradition continues.
I think so.
Yeah. Your parents would be proud of them.
Well, I think they would. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
They would be really proud.
Yeah, sure. So now what are you doing now that you're retired? That you just, I'm sure not sitting back on your horses.
Well, I, let me see, I was in, I got off the board of the American Academy of Honor Physicians. I still want a couple of time to teach the board on their medical advisory board. And I just got recently appointed to the board of directors of SACTOM, which is a new endeavor which I was part of in graduate study research.
And what will you be doing in that capacity?
It's as a board member, setting policy and reviewing the EMS directives and fundraising and helping out. So I think SACTOM is really a Maryland treasure. It's something that my brother helped to establish.
Did he really?
Adam Kelly really helped to do that when he was the commissioner years ago. And so I feel good about being part of the future. I will enjoy that. It's something to get out my eyes. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that would be quite enjoyable. I'm having fun with some grandchildren.
Well,
and
that's important.
They're in and out of here all the time. My children and my grandchildren, so it's fun. Jim and I are enjoying some traveling. Actually,
having a good time. Keep on going.
Keep on going.
Yeah, if your parents came back today and saw Havana Grace, what do you think would surprise them the most?
All the buildings. All the buildings, all the changes in the Oxford Society building, being Havana Grace and everything, the whole family, actually. Goodness, having been away there, you know, it was just a little stop along the way. You know, the Bel Air, it was nothing as it is today. And the countryside has changed such a great deal. But the racetrack that we enjoyed is now the National Guard. You know, I think that would surprise my dad. Along the building.
And I usually always ask people, well, if there's anything you'd change in your life, but it doesn't sound like you would.
I don't think I've changed anything since I was a kid. I've enjoyed everything I've ever done, and I've enjoyed. Him and I have been married 47 years this month, and we've had a good relationship, and the kids have been wonderful, so I've been blessed.
That's wonderful. Not many people can say that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure your parents would be extremely sad. Were your parents still alive when you were in the legislature?
Well, no. My dad died in 68, and he would have been proud of that, because he's always had a little knack for the political life himself. And he went to town school, actually.
Did he really?
When he went, when he was small, his parents took him back to Lebanon as a child. He was very small, and I think maybe under a year old. And he spoke English, Arabic, and French, because that's what they were taught there. And then he brought him back to this country when he was like 10 or 12. He went to the town school, a finished school at Fort
Collins.
And did very well, but he always had a knack for the political world. I think I think probably the common got that as well. But he really enjoyed being in government. He never called himself a politician.
He was in government.
He always said that he was in government.
That's interesting.
And And I think that he looked at it from that perspective as well. He felt that, you know, he wasn't there to persuade people, he was there to help people.
Well, then there's a difference there. Yeah.
And he worked in government to help people.
Well, now this is just a devotion. Do you keep up any rabbinic traditions?
Oh, yes.
Do you?
Oh, yes.
Do you speak Arabic?
I understand all Arabic. I could not speak Arabic anymore because I have no one to speak to. Actually, my mother probably spoke Arabic to me.
Did they?
Up until first grade, I probably didn't know any English. Little English.
Mm-hmm.
To the first grade or kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And we all spoke Arabic. And I'm very sorry today that I hadn't proceeded as I could have, actually.
Yeah.
But there were not many people in this area that spoke Arabic, especially in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, something we didn't keep up with. And after my mother always spoke Arabic to me. We used to have a little secret, you know, Arabic. Up until the time she died. She died in January of 91. But since that time, I've had no one to speak Arabic to. So my Arabic is failing.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand all Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the dialect that of our country, there are like 400 different dialects in Arabic.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel people judged you because you're Lebanese?
I think that some people did when we were growing up in Paraguay. I think that we were considered foreigners, you know, even though we were born and raised in this country. My mother and father were born and raised in this country.
Sure.
You know, they were both born in Philadelphia and grandparents came, but, you know, we still kept our traditions at home because we cooked a lot of Lebanese food, and I still cook Lebanese food. I cook tabbouleh and kibbeh and lahm misri and stuffed babi and stuff. I mean, I still do a lot of Arabic cooking from this. And, I think that they saw that and thought, you know, they're foreigners, and there was a little bit of especially, I think people, unfortunately, there's a certain jealousy in the world, and when they saw people excelling, that they thought, you know, where did they come from, you know, to be excelling in this way, because my brothers are pretty smart folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they excelled in everything they did, so it was their story for the day.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, but how proud your whole family had to be.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, you know, very sorry that my dad did not live to see, you know, the results of his work. And my mother actually passed away. She passed away the Friday before I was born into the hospital.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
But she knew.
Oh,
but
she knew that I had one. Yes, she knew I had just one. She came in.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, she died on a Friday morning, and I was secluded and took out her outfit for her to wear.
Oh dear.
The next Wednesday, when I was being installed into the hospital.
She was there.
Yeah. So it was quite a hard time for me that
first. Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Well, you certainly had a remarkable life.
Yeah.
Which is hardly over. I mean, I'm sure you'll do even more and better things.
Oh,
what are you proud of?
My children.
Mm.
My children. They're kids, and they're doing good work. And
that's all we can ask for, isn't it? Yeah. Well, is there anything else you'd like anybody to know about you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know why I'd be interested.
I think your accomplishments are wonderful, and I still hate to say this, but and especially for a woman at a time before a lot of women were doing much more than staying at home.
Well, I think that was my father's dream. It doesn't matter, you know.
He didn't care that you were a female.
I was female. If your brothers can do it, you can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if they're going to be a doctor or lawyer, you can be a doctor.
And did you compete a lot with your brothers?
No,
kids?
Never.
Is that right?
No, there was never any competition. They are 7 and 8 years older than me. And they were wonderful big brothers. And they were very, always very supportive and always very helpful and caring. And my big brother, Tommy, used to come down and check my apartment every night at the University of Maryland, but they would, you know, outside of school, he had an apartment on St. Paul Street in Baltimore. He would come down and check us out, make sure that the doors were locked, I always had wonderful support from those things.
Well, it sounds like you made it because of a lot of support from a lot of people.
Absolutely. And during, you know, my early years, it was my parents, my brothers, and my husband. So
Well, you've been a lucky woman.
I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky. Yeah. I consider myself
a but you've also given back, so we're all lucky,
lucky
too.
I'm very lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can't say anything more than that, can we?
No, we really can't. Yeah. I've enjoyed it all.
Well, good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much.
See how easy that was once I got this.
Mm-hmm.